Excuse me while I'm still trying to get used to functioning kind of the way I am, and I'll figure out a way to where to put this thing where it won't move or anything. How'd y'all's week go? I'm good. I'm drugged up, but I'm good. Now, 3 hours from now, I'll need a pack of ice real bad, and my leg will have to be elevated. So, but for the next little while, I'm good. So, Tylenol is kicking in. You'll turn your Bibles with me. Let's go today to the book of Exodus, the 20th chapter. I told they'll have to work with me real hard upstairs. I'm not sure what order we'll pull all the verses, but Exodus 20 and verse 17. Most of us know the Ten Commandments pretty easily. We can quote them and everything like that. But there are certain ones that we don't have a problem noticing or calling out or seeing on a normal basis. And those are the ones that we think cause us the most problems. Those are the ones we think cause us the greatest trouble in our lives. When in fact, they're not. In fact, if I was to tell you, you know, do not murder, don't kill anybody, don't steal, don't do certain things, that's not a problem. Honor your father and mother, that's been thrown at you a bunch of times in your life. But number 10 is where God is summing up everything that He wants to say. And when He does, He simply comes out, in fact, of all the other ones, He doesn't even expound on. He doesn't use much explanation. He doesn't spend much time talking. But when He gets to number 10, He wants it to be understood that this is an all-encompassing Scripture. This last one is one that covers all of us in different areas of our life. And there's not an area or a place that we're ever going to be that we do not have to guard against. I don't wake up every day thinking about killing somebody. I don't walk around the streets and go into Walmart and think, man, I wish nobody was looking. I'd steal something. I don't always have that. But the 10th one is one that consistently in my life is always working against me. It is always working, trying to hinder me from becoming and being what I'm supposed to be, more than any of the others. In fact, if you steal something, you may have to repay it. You may have to do some time. You may have to do whatever. But the fact is that sentence will be done. You can move on with your life. But when we get to this 10th one, thou shalt not covet, all of a sudden now we're dealing with something that will stop you for your entire life. Because here's the problem with it. Anybody ever get to a point to where you're like, God, I want this. God, I'd like to have this. God, I'm ready for You to give me this, or bring this person into my life, or whatever it may be. And then all of a sudden, God doesn't do anything. God doesn't move. Now, we know that it's not because God can't, and it's not because, in fact, that He's holding out, because He said, no good thing will I withhold from you. So my question becomes then in my mind, why do I want something? Why am I desiring something? Why am I thinking about something? Why am I hoping for something that God's not going to give me? Well, the problem is that there are some journeys in our lives that are not just point A to B. They are not just something that God shows you because you can handle it. God shows it because He wants you to see where the possibilities are for your future. Now, these are the hardest ones. These are the most difficult ones. I can't tell you how many times in my life I've got visions of things or thought about things and dreamed about things, and then all of a sudden now the worst part about it is now we start this journey. Me and God, we start this long journey to fulfill it. It doesn't matter if it's the building. It doesn't matter if it's ministry. It doesn't matter if it's helping somebody. It doesn't matter what it is. I know that the moment God shows me something, and He's showing it because He hasn't given it yet, I realize that He's saying, Tim, this is what I'd like to do for you. This is where I would like us to be able to operate. This is where I would like for us to be able to do things. Now, Tim, I don't have a problem with it. But we need to search you. And we need to work through some things in your life. In fact, some things may be generational. Some things that may be hindering you, Tim, may be simply who you're hanging with or where you're operating right now or the way you think. So God starts us on a journey. Let's read this scripture and then we'll go. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his maidservants or men servants, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. Exodus 20 and 17. Now let me give you some insight into this if we think it's so strange. One statistic, and I'm not big on statistics, there are certain phrases or statistics I like. And it's not so much because they got numbers with them, it's more because of what they say. Listen to this. Tell me if this doesn't ring a bell. America has more things than any other nation in the world. We have more things. Today we can decide if we want to eat chicken, Mexican. We can leave here. We can do whatever we want to do. We can go to Walmart. If we're without something, we've got not one gas station. You can take your pick. You've got all types of choices from the moment you went to your closet this morning and picked out what clothes you were going to wear. Not just put on clothes. You picked out what clothes out of abundance of clothes. America has more things than any other nation in the world. And more books on how to find happiness. I love that. We have everything in the world, but we're also the greatest exporter on books on trying to find happiness, on trying to find something that'll make me happy. We don't have to look very far because the world will spend this year, in America, they will spend $1.7 trillion. Not on a budget, not on anything. You know what it's spent on? Advertisement. In America, companies will spend $1.7 trillion on advertisement to simply do this one thing. It only has one cause. To tell you you don't have something, you do not have something that you need that somebody else has, and therefore their life is better than yours. Your car is not up to par, and therefore we need to sell you this car because you will be happy if you can go to 0 to 60 in this amount of time, or you have this look. Your windows are not white enough. I don't care if you got a generic window washing thing. I don't care if you got white Windows Plus. You don't have Windex Plus. And with Windex Plus, even birds laugh at you outside. Haven't you seen the commercial? Even birds laugh at you from the windows and says, man, their windows just are not white. And so now everything that I'm seeing, everything that I watch, every type of commercial, everything that's brought at me is simply to tell me my clothes are not right, my shoes are not right, my life is not right, my weight is not right, my hair color is all wrong, I don't have the right kind of glasses, and if I have glasses I should have surgery because I don't need glasses and I look better without glasses, and if I'm bald I need hair put on my head, and if I have hair on my head then I need something else to help my libido or to help something else in my life. I'm without something. I'm losing my life because I don't have enough. Everything is geared toward one thing. Convincing you your life is not enough. It's not good enough. You haven't achieved enough. So yes, we're not going to go out and kill anybody. We're not going to stab anybody. But we're going to do a lot of coveting. I'll give it to you this way. Here's really what covetous means. And this is the title of my sermon. I know my head is kind of, so you just got to bear with me. I have desires, you know. Look at the person beside you and say, I have desires, you know. And before you think Pastor Lot's fixing to come tell you, oh, quit all your desires. No, those are God-given things. Most of them are God-given things. We need to probably talk about them to make sure, but the fact is, I would hope that most of the things that you want are God-given things. I need a better vehicle. I need... There's nothing wrong with any of the God-given desires or dreams or things that He's put in you. What's pushed me to where I am? A lot of times it's the things that He's put in front of me and said, Tim, here's where we can go. Here's what we can do. Here's a desire. If you'll work, if you'll do what I've asked you to do, if you'll trust me, we can reach another level in your life. Nothing wrong with desires. And sometimes I look and I'm like, God, you know I got desires. I got desires, you know? God's like, I know. I know. But here's our problem. We all have ambitions. We all should have goals. Covetousness, though, is an excessive desire for something where nothing's wrong or nothing's really wanting. In other words, I want a better car, but I have a good car. It runs now. Man, when I was growing up, the thought of trading in a car before it couldn't be nothing but pulled by a rope. Those days are gone. I mean, now it's almost 100,000 miles on this car. It's going to lose its value. I'm like, if we're going to drive it 10 more years, who cares? Those days are gone. Now, I'm already... Have you seen the new style? Have you seen the new body? Have you seen the new... And I'm willing to indebt myself. I'm willing to put myself in a tougher situation just because of certain things. So when ambitions reach beyond what is really necessary in my life, that's when they become covetousness. Like something better from your family, a better job, education, etc. These are just normal things. But coveting is a craving that causes compromises of convictions in trying to obtain what you want. It is also an envious desire for what someone else has, desiring what they have to be yours. It is like greed in the terms of desire for more, and like envy in terms of desire for what someone else has. Covetousness moves into greed, it moves into envy, it moves into strife, it moves into all these things. Let me put it to you this way. There was a guy once that was walking along the beach, and when he was walking along the beach, he found a bottle. And like everybody else, picks it up, pulls the cork off of it, or checks for anything. And when he does, a genie comes out. You can tell this is a lie, so just look for it. A genie pops out. Of course, the genie says, you have 3 wishes. But here's the catch. Whatever you wish, upon the person you hate the most, they will get double. So at first he thought about it. He said, I want $5 million. Right off the bat, I know, money's always the... I want $5 million. And he does. But in a vision, he can see his friend on the other side, or his enemy that he hates with all of his heart. All of a sudden, he receives a check that day for $10 million. He looks and he says, I want the biggest diamond that has ever been. And plop. That day, his friend in his backyard is digging a hole and hits something, looks down and finds 2 of the biggest diamonds that have ever been found. Man. He's got 1 more wish. He thinks and he thinks. Finally, he looks at the genie and he says, I know what I want. Genie says, what? I want you to scare me half to death. It's not the fact that I got $5 million. It's not the fact that I got the largest diamond. It's the fact that I still do not have as much. I still have not achieved. I still have not reached that point. Rockefeller was once asked many years ago, you know, what will it take to find... He was the richest man, discovered oil, did all these things, had enormous amounts of wealth, the richest man in the world. And you know what Rockefeller said? I need just a little bit more. The richest man in the world could not within himself find happiness. Spurgeon said it this way. He said, of the thousands that I have led to the Lord, he said, I've never heard someone say that they were saved from their sin of covetousness. Never have I ever heard anybody come to an altar and confess that I am a coveter and I need forgiveness. In fact, another one, LaSalle, who was one of the great priests of his day, a famous priest of the Middle Ages, said this, he has never heard a confession on covetousness. It's so embedded into us, it's so natural to us to just think that that's a natural thing. I just want more. Why do you want more? Why do you need more? Well, I just want a better life, or I just want a better this, or I just want a better that. Do you understand? That's what's caused all covetousness throughout history. In fact, when we read the Bible, it is one of, from the beginning to the end of the Bible, it is the leading cause of people missing out on what God wants. You start from the beginning, and we meet a lady by the name of Eve, who covets the fruit that's on that tree more than the fruit that's all throughout an entire garden. She can eat of any tree, any fruit, anything, but I want that one. Because I can't have that one. That's the one I want. In fact, when you go through the Bible, you'll see Lot coveted the best land. You'll see that Achan coveted a little bit of gold when they destroyed Jericho. You'll discover that Ahab coveted Naboth's vineyard. David coveted Bathsheba, somebody else's wife. Judas coveted 30 pieces of silver more than his relationship with Christ. Ananias and Sapphira coveted their lie. They'd rather hold on to their lie than to have to come and be truthful. Throughout the Bible, and I could go on and on and on and on, it's just simply, this is the key sin in people's lives. That's why we do throw up that, well, I ain't never stole nothing from anybody. I ain't never killed nobody. I'm not a bad person. But then we live most of our lives still scratching, clawing, manipulating, whatever we have to do to get that little bit more because we deserve it. We've earned it. It's not fair. Jesus said it this way in Mark 7 and 21 through 22. When he talks about sin, for from within, not of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, and murders. Thefts. What's that word? Covetousness. Wickedness, deceitful, lasciviousness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. Listen, it's not from the outside, it's from our inside. It's where it comes from. It's not the fact that we saw the commercial. It's the fact the commercial stirs something within us. It's not the fact that somebody got a car. It's the fact that when they got the car, it stirred something in us. And what we have to deal with is the thing that is within us that causes us not to be content. Ezekiel cried out this about his people. He said, with their mouth they show much love, but their heart goeth after covetousness. They tell God all the time, God, I love you. I love you. I love you. But then their hands and their feet are constantly working for that little bit more. No wonder we walk in here most of the time not happy. We live our lives not happy. Let me go into depth a little more about this Exodus 20 and 17. He lists some things that I want to show you real quick. First, he said, do not covet a house. To some people in here, your whole mindset is, if I could ever get the right place to live, if I could ever get out of this dump, if I could ever get my bathroom remodeled, if I could ever get a few things situated, if I could ever get my grass the way I want it, if I could ever get, and we talk about it on a constant basis, and we remind people on a constant basis, and we are willing to do whatever we have to do to be able to reach. When he says a house, it encompasses more than just simply, oh, I'm happy with my house. Oh, but are we? The second one, he says, a wife. Here's a phrase I'll check with you. Do you ever say this to your spouse or think about this about your spouse. Why can't you be more like... See, that's coveting. Why can't you be more like so-and-so? Why can't you do this? Why can't... I mean, so-and-so's husband or so-and-so's wife does this, and so-and-so's family, look how they are, and look at us. We don't even match. And what we do is we compare our relationships. We compare our deepest relationships to how we think it ought to be. No wonder when it comes to pornography and things like that. That's why men are so susceptible to that. Why? It's not because they can't get a girl. It's because when their mind is warped and twisted, here's the mindset. I can't get the girl to act like this one. I can't get her... You know one of the worst things? You know what I tell you? One of the grossest things that is happening among couples, like young dating couples of 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds. You've got young men that are telling young girls, hey, sit down and watch pornography with me. Watch videos with me. You know why that is? Because they want to try that girl to see that where she will perform or act or look or treat like the person on there. Because our mind gets so warped into what we want from somebody. How we want them to be. Why can't you dress more like this? Why can't you act more like this? Why do you always have to talk like this? Why do you always have to do this? Why can't you be more like somebody else? Look at the person beside you and say, I don't think he's talking about me. The problem is, I'm talking about a lot of people in this room. Servants. Oh, Brother Lott, I'm off of that. We don't have no servants and we can't afford servants. Sure you do. We just talked about some of them. I wish, you know, I ain't got a truck like Brother Lott. He's got a better servant than I've got. See, a servant is anything that helps you, that takes care for you, that does for you. Man, so-and-so, I went in their kitchen the other day, they got two Baker ovens. I mean, they got this huge microwave. We ain't got squat. Be careful. Because the things that serve one person, you will wish that you had the same servants in your life. Right down to a microwave, to a refrigerator, to furniture, to the house, or to any other part of your life. Do not covet someone's donkey or oxen. In Moses' time, they were considered income. I remember my mom or my dad talking years ago that when they were sharecropping and things, my grandfather had two mules. And he would always pick with those kids and he would say to them, you make sure the mules are taken care of. You make sure they're fed and make sure everything. I mean, even if they were to hook reins to them and pull, like my dad would say when Papa wasn't around, they would hook the reins to it and build them a little sled that would fit to the back of it, you know, like about a pen or whatever. And man, they'd make that mule pull them all over the yard and everything. And Papa would come in, that mule would just be all lathered down. And man, he would be hot. He would wear them out. And this was his statement to them. He said, I can't replace you. Me and Mama can have another you, but we can't afford another mule. Now, how would you like to live up in that house? And there's some of us in this room that we covet other people's mules and donkeys. We wish we had their job. We wish they had their position. We wish they had their income. We wish we had their money. We wish we had their abilities and extra house or whatever else they got it. And man, I tell you, boy, if I had that, I'm telling you, I'd be living then. So we live our life coveting other people's mules. Things that are part of their life, we think should be part of our life. It can go even to sports abilities. We can covet other people's marriages. We can covet their clothes. We see somebody walk in, something cool on, and we're like, man, I need to go shopping. Don't have no money to go shopping. This just stinks. Don't even have decent clothes. I'm not even going to go to church. I don't have anything to wear. We covet people's teaching ability, or whether they can sing better than us, or whether they can do something better. It starts to encompass every avenue of our life. And before long, we spend more of our time wishing what we could be and should be and ought to be and what we want to be than what we are. You want to be a miserable person, live most of your life feeling like you never have enough. You never have enough in your marriage, you never have enough in your work, you never have enough in your life, you never have enough. And it becomes a pretty disparaging feeling. Now, if I had time, which I don't, can I blow through a story real quick, and I'm going to cover it. I'm not going to cover it in detail. In Genesis 24, starts a story of a man by the name of Laban. Laban was Rebekah's brother. If you get a chance, read this chapter and you go into it in more detail. But here's basically what happens. Abraham has one son, Isaac, and he's looking for him to have a wife. He tells his servant, go back to my people and find among my people a maid that is suitable for my son. So the servant does. Takes 10 camels. Abraham's rich. Takes 10 camels, takes everything he needs, and when he gets there, he says, God, I don't know how to pick no woman. I don't know anything about picking women, but here's what I'll do, God. I'm at a well. It's getting about time for the women to come out to the well. And here's what I pray. I pray that the woman that you want will be the woman that I will ask that, hey, will you give me something to drink? And she will say, not only will I give you something to drink, but I will give your camels something to drink. And she will not only give me water, but also water my camels. That will be a sign to me that this is the right girl. And so he does. Rebecca is the one who comes out, Laban's sister. And she comes out to the well, and just as he had prayed, he asks her, can I have something to drink? She says, yes, and here, let me take care of your camels also. He is astonished. He says, who are you? And she tells him, and all of a sudden he realizes that they're kin folks. Distant kin. That's Abraham's father's family. Oh, he's excited. So he goes and tells, and they get to the house of Rebekah and Laban. And here's the first sign you see of Laban. Laban is a shrewd, he wants to be somebody in life. Look at the person beside you and say, do you want to be somebody in life? Sure. And when I say that, a lot of people say, I don't care about being rich. I ain't talking about that. I'm just talking about where your life at the end, you get to say, yeah, I made something of my life. Whether it's a good dad, a good mom, a good whatever, you've done it. Laban just has a desire to be something. And he also believes in God. So the servant tells Laban the story, and he says, now God has done this. And Laban says, look, we can't argue with God. Take our sister. Take Rebekah and let her be the bride for Abraham's son. And everybody's happy. And then the servant does something. He starts pulling out jewels and goes to the camels and starts pulling out stuff. He decorates Rebekah. And this is something you can always have fun with somebody. When somebody says, are you like Abraham's child or not? And you just tell them. Say, now Abraham believed in nose rings. Because Abraham's servant put a nose ring on Rebekah. That's biblical. I'm just saying. Then don't go get no nose ring. Because I don't like them and I don't believe in them. But I'm just telling you, you can always argue a point from either side if you want to be hypocritical. Now, moving on to the story. That's free. That don't cost you nothing. We could take another offering for that. That helps somebody. That gave you ammunition. I'm a child of Abraham. So now, all of a sudden, Laban now is getting these bracelets and gold and stuff put in his hands, and he's like, this is pretty cool. Now, he's done said that you just go ahead and take Rebecca. Just go ahead. But now they done slept on it. And he's been sitting there looking at them jewels and looking at them bracelets. And, you know, that cat's pretty rich. We might could squeeze some more out of this. And the next morning they get up and the servant says, it's time for me to go. And Laban says, hold on. We're going to let Rebecca stay here for at least 10 more days. You know, give her a chance to kind of get used to this thing, and then we'll talk some more. The servant says, no. I got to go. Either give me back my stuff and let me go, or let's do what you said. And Laban didn't want to. In fact, he calls Rebecca and he says, well, let Rebecca decide then. Fine. He calls Rebecca, and Rebecca comes into the room, and he says, do you want to go with him? And Rebecca says, yes, I'll go. I know we make that look real spiritual, but it's really a guy standing there and thinking, do you know how much money this guy's got? He just brought 10 camels. You know what camels are worth? So now all of a sudden, Laban, for the first time in his life, he's having to deal with this. But now Rebecca is raised in the same home that Laban is, right? So she's got some of this same in her. If you're a Lot, you're a Lot. Me and Trent, you may think we're a lot of different. He's so sweet and kind and good, gentle. I'll tell you something, he's got a lot in him. He's got a lot in him. I'm telling you. Not as much, maybe he don't show as much as me or Terrence or somebody else, but he's got it in him. And Rebecca may not be as crude as Laban, but she's got it in her. In fact, we find it out when she has two sons. And she gets a word from God that says the younger will be over the older. And so she falls in with Jacob. The father loves Esau of the twins that she has. I've got to hurry through this story. Make a long story short, she passes on to Jacob the qualities that she and Laban already have. It's a covetous spirit. It's a whatever it takes spirit. It's whatever you have to do spirit. And now it's passed on to Jacob. You know what Jacob does? He tricks his brother out of his inheritance. He finally manipulates his dad with the help of Rebecca. Rebecca cooks the stew. She's the one that overhears Esau and Isaac talking. And she said, look, we got to get this because your father is fixing to bless Esau and you're going to miss out on the blessing. We got to trick your father. How'd you like to have a wife like that? But she does it. Passes it on to Jacob. Now Jacob, when Esau finds out about all this, he says, I'm going to kill you. Where do you think Jacob runs to? Laban's house. Now, ain't nothing more sweet than to see two covetous people stuck in the same house together. You can't rob from one because they're robbing you. And these two have been hooked together for 20 years. Laban's done got it over on him at least twice. Laban, on one occasion, says, look, yeah, you can marry my daughter. He worked 7 years to marry the daughter. And you know what Laban does? He gives him the other daughter. And he has to work 7 more years to get the right daughter. Oh, Laban's a crude dude now. But Jacob's not done without. Jacob is manipulating the situation because he works another 6 years to gain the cattle that he earns and says that it's his. And then by night, he runs and sneaks out. Oh, it's passed on even to his kids. Because notice what his daughter, Laban's daughter, does. She steals the gods from his house, hides them in her sack, and sits on them so nobody can find them. You're talking about a messed up family. But they're all just trying to get there. They don't mean to hurt you. They don't mean to do you wrong. They are just trying to find happiness in their life. They are just trying to find a place in their life where they can truly be happy. This has been passed on from generation to generation to generation to generation. Jacob in Bethel finally gets it broke in his life. He finally decides, I surrender all of my life. And guess what? He has a son. And he has a son by the name of Joseph. Joseph is the first test on this. Whether you live a covetous life or whether you will live a godly life. Now where does it all begin, covetousness? Covetousness begins first with ambition. It begins with a dream. If I was to ask you this morning, what is the thing that you long for the most? So if I'm talking to a young lady, a young teenage girl, she's probably saying, I want a husband. And I want somebody to love me one day. And I want to be in a good relationship. And I want to... Well, then there's your battle. Now the battle will become whether you will hold to the fact that I am going to become and I am not going to accept anything less than that. Or whether my covetousness, my wanting it so bad, will eventually cause me to compromise and accept something that I know does not live up to the bill. I will end up having sex, or end up getting pregnant, or end up doing it with two or three different people through my relationship, trying to find that Mr. Right and trying to find somebody, instead of simply saying, God, here's the ambition I have in my life, but now you have to get me there. Let's do this journey together. See, it works. It could be a young man in here right now that says, you know what, I want to be something. I want to do something in my life. But here, I grew up from a wrong side of a town. You don't understand, most of my family is drug addicts, or most of my family is it comes from bad stuff. So, guess what? I've done this good thing, Brother Lot, for 3 years, and it doesn't seem to be working, and it doesn't seem to be moving fast enough, and nothing's happening for me. And my buddy down the road has been making money hand over fist, selling drugs on the corner. You don't know how hard it is for me not to sell drugs because I can make $2,000 like that. I don't have to have this just pushing around or waiting on God. I can reach out right now. I can break into somebody's house. I know I've got somebody who leaves their window open and they don't even know it, but I know I can get their stuff and I could pawn it. I know so many things I could do. Now the battle begins. Doesn't matter if we're older. We all know the battles we fight each day to whether we're going to do it God's way or do it our way. Whether we're going to trust God or trust ourselves. Whether we're going to be godly or covetous. And the enemy works on us because he knows we have ambitions, every one of us. He knows we have dreams in our lives. But what he wants us to do is to walk away from God and pursue those dreams in our own strength, in our own way. It doesn't matter if through all these generations of this family it's been one chaos after another, one mess up after another, one problem after another, because they've always tried to finish with themselves what God says I'm the one that has to finish. Now Joseph has the chance. You know what it begins with? A dream. Joseph has a dream. He dreams that the sun and the moon is going to bow down to him and the stars. He dreams that the wheat will bow down. You know what he's dreaming? When he tells his brothers and his dad, you know what happens? Instantly they say, you think we're going to bow down to you? And he's like, I don't know. I'm telling you what I dreamed. All I can tell you is what I've dreamed. And I love this part of the story. The Bible says, and I could see at that table that day, at that kitchen table, when Joseph shares this dream with his family and the brothers are going off and everybody's mad and everybody's, oh, I tell you what, I'll kill you before I bow down to you. And the Bible says that Israel or Jacob ponders and thinks on those things. You know why? Because Jacob is someone who grew up with ambition and dreams. Jacob is someone that has to now hope and wish that, son, if it is, let it be God. Here's how you take something that's an ambition and turn it into the reality. Number one, realize that things won't satisfy you. Here's the test that you will have to go through to reach your ambitions in life. Number one, realize that things will not satisfy you. They will not satisfy you. How do you know, Brother Lot? Well, ask Joseph. He had a coat of many colors. Did that bring him satisfaction? If his coat was the reason he would be happy, do you think he would have stayed happy? Nope. How about when he was finally a servant in Potiphar's house and Potiphar's wife comes on to him and says, "Hey, nobody's watching. Me and you can do this." How satisfied do you have to be when you're pursuing godly things? Completely. For some of you in here, the biggest problem you have is the fact that you can't be content. And because you can't be content with your life right now, now, content doesn't mean I don't work hard for more. Doesn't mean I'm not trying for more. It just means, you know what, God? I'm right where I'm supposed to be in this journey. I'm not 5 miles behind. I'm not 5 miles forward. I'm right where I'm supposed to be. I'm satisfied. Paul said, I've learned that whatever state I'm in, I've learned to be content. I've learned to be satisfied. I've learned to not overcome. Let me give it to you this way. What is the opposite of covet? To be contented. The fuel of coveting is discontent. Covetousness begins when you become discontent with what you are and where you are and what you have, and it's not enough. The area in your life you're willing to drop or manipulate or to cheat in or lie in or to do something you know you're not supposed to do is because you're not happy, not content. When we allow discontent to enter our spirit, it is only a short time before we find ourselves coveting what others have. And coveting leads to all kinds of sins within themselves. Joseph's first test of trying this breaking covetousness in my family was that he had to be content right where he was. I'm going to tell you something. That was hard for me because I grew up in lime green trailers and I grew up to people picking on me when I got on the bus and couldn't believe we all lived in that same little old tin can and all that. Do you know how bad I wanted to be discontented? You know how hard it was for me to not give my life totally to something, just a house, just to be able to look at somebody and say, "That's my house." I had to fight that enormously. God had to deal with me in several different areas to break that discontent in my life. To say, "Tim, you're going to have to be content right where I am." You know how He did it? He made me have to go back and live in a place where I would never go myself. I had a 4.0 average living in Birmingham, Alabama. I had everything I wanted. You know what? God allowed me, by His grace, to move all the way back to Batesville, Mississippi, all the way back to a little town called Marks that's just outside of that. My dad was pastoring a church then. I moved back into the room, sleeping on the floor of a mattress with my brothers. I left my bed. I left my 3 bedrooms. I left to sleep on the same mattress with 1 air conditioner in the wall because we'd turn it on to keep the mosquitoes stuck to the wall. They don't bite you when it's cold. They won't fly when it's cold. They'll stay against the wall. We used to have so many bloody spots all over the wall. We used to have fun just seeing how many we could kill before we went to bed. Can you imagine how in my mind, God, I just left everything I had and You brought me back to here. Tim, you're going to have to learn to be content. If you eat potted meat and crackers the rest of your life, and you sleep on a mattress with your brothers sticking their toes in your face, then you're going to have to learn to be happy right here. Some of you in this room, it's the hardest battle you've got to fight right now to learn to be happy right where God is starting your life. Without bolting, without going after something, without trying to pursue something of your own strength. The second thing, you've got to learn to be thankful. Can you imagine Joseph being thankful when his brothers threw him in a pit, sold him? Can you imagine Joseph being thankful when he was sold into slavery and the man's wife comes on to him? He doesn't even do anything. And she says he tries to rape him and gets him thrown in jail. Can you imagine being thankful? Spending years in prison until a cook and a cupbearer end up in there because Pharaoh got mad at him. And you tell them their dreams and then they leave and forget about you. And you spend more years in there. Can you imagine being thankful? I'll tell you how you know more than anything else. Your ability to still be shapeable determines how thankful you actually live your life. A thankful person will give away what they have because they feel like they have plenty. An unthankful person won't share anything. Joseph has spent all these years in prison. Joseph knows the king's dreams. Joseph knows he can tell him anything he wants to know. And you know what happens? Joseph is fixing to go into the largest man, the most powerful man in the world. And here's what they tell Joseph. You're going to have to shave your beard. Because Pharaoh, he doesn't like beards. Imagine us. We'd have looked at them and said, do you know what I've been through? Do you know how much junk I've been through? I've been accused of rape. I've been sold by my brothers. I've been in jail for no reason for all these years. And now you want me to shave my beard? Joseph shaves his beard, puts on the clothes that are appropriate to go in to see the king of Egypt. Why? Because Joseph lives a thankful life. Joseph lives a life that is thankful. If you're dealing with bitterness, mad because it hasn't happened, it won't happen, it hadn't happened quick enough, can I tell you what happened? You stop being thankful for what you already have. You stop being thankful. Number three, enjoy the life God has given you right now. Brother Lott, you don't know. It ain't all good yet. That's not the point. If you're ever going to reach your ambitions, you're going to have to learn to live your life thankful and live your life happy where it is right now. I promise you, God's not going to give you more. Pull up that scripture from Ecclesiastes. I got 2 minutes. And I'm through. My time is up. He that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loves abundance with increase. This is also vanity. Verse 11. When goods increase, they are increased that do what? That eat them. And what good is it there to the owners thereof, having the beholding of them with their eyes? Let me tell you something about wealth. It doesn't matter if on your plate is a potted meat sandwich, a ribeye, or a Colby steak. They all three are just different levels. Do you know what the difference is? Nothing. The person who's eating the potted meat sandwich, their stomach gets full. The person who eats the ribeye, their stomach gets full. The person who eats the Colby steak, their stomach gets full. But you said, but like the Colby is so much more. But notice this now. It costs more. They're not eating any more food. Their stomach is no more full. They just had to pay more for what they have. It doesn't matter if you drive a beat-up Volkswagen. It doesn't matter if you drive a Toyota. And it doesn't matter if you drive a Benz or a Bentley. They all are doing what? Driving you to your destination. The only difference is that each one has paid what they can pay to get there. The wisest man that ever lived, he was the richest man in the world at the time. You know what he says? He says, I've learned that if you got more food, it just means there's more mouths to feed. Somebody said, boy, I wish I was a boss. I had four or five different people. That's just more checks to write. It's more worry to have to deal with. I remember one of the greatest lessons I learned in that was when I worked in the grocery store. And you know, they build those grocery stores where it just looks so enticing to be in that office because the office is up above everything. And you look down on everybody. And you get up to use a little mic. We need somebody at cash register number 10 and we need such, such, and such, and such. And I used to push in buggies. And I used to think, one of these days, I'm going to have that good job. I got that good job. They put me on 48 variable, which literally means it's called Chinese pay back in those days. It means basically after 48 hours, they didn't have to really pay you much but a dollar or something an hour. Your salary was pretty much unpaid. What that also meant was is I used to get mad when I was young because I'd be trying to earn money then and the bosses would say, Tim, go on home. We don't need you anymore today. Just go on home. And I used to get so mad. I need my hours. Then I realized why he did that. It's because the boss ahead of him told him, look, we use too many hours. You send them home and you run the register. And you do that. You know what I found out? By the time I compared my paycheck to the guy that was pushing the buggies and we compared the hours and the per hour and all that we put in, you know what? I realized that sucker was living pretty good. Because I was putting nearly 70 hours a week in. My shoes were wearing out. I was having to wear three insoles from standing on concrete 15 hours a day. He complained coming in 6 hours and going home. And when I showed my stub to people, and I was ashamed of it, I showed them my stub, and they'd look, well, I never knew that. The only difference between the potted meat and the ribeye and the Colby is that it's more mouths to feed. Wisest man in the world. So the goal is that wherever you're at right now in your life, whether you're eating the potted meat, whether you're eating the ribeye, whether you're eating the Colby, you be happy. Because whatever level you go to in your life, there's going to be a little more expected. And a lot more to give. And a lot more that is taken. And a lot more mouths to feed. Fourth thing, start desiring the right thing. You know what Joseph did? Man, I need to get up and walk so bad. This is what Joseph did. Joseph finally realized, I'm good. Joseph finally realized one thing. He finally realized, I cannot change where I'm at. I cannot change today what I'm faced with. But I can change today my expectations and my hopes. Paul would say it this way in Philippians, what is more? I consider everything a loss compared to the surpassing greatness of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord. for whose sake I have lost all things. I consider them rubbish, that I may gain Christ." Here was a guy sitting in prison wondering, what is my life worth? But here's a guy that decided, even though I'm in prison, my life's got to be worth something in God's hands. Paul had no idea that 2,000 years later, somebody would be taking the letters that he wrote in a prison, had put them in a book with 66 books. We would call it the Holy Bible, that he would be the leading author of the New Testament, of a book that has sold more copies than any book in history. And that his writings would still be winning souls thousands of years after he was already gone. Where do you think your life can go? How far do you think God could take your life? I'll tell you this much. It could go way beyond anything you can ever imagine. You're going to leave this room today and you're going to do one of two things. You're going to learn to live your life content. It means I work hard, I won't. I just believe that God's going to bless me. But the timetable and all of that, that's up to God. Or I'll leave here today and I might have to fudge on my income taxes because, you know, I deserve that money a little more than the government does. I might have to, you know, I might get the better end of a deal somewhere along the way if I just don't disclose everything. There may come an opportunity that I might be able to get ahead on my own. The Bible calls it covetousness. Contentment with God, the Bible says, is great gain. And I ask you today, how content are you in that life that you live? This week, I've had to fight that more than anything else. You can do a lot of things to me, but don't just shut me down. I don't do good shut down. I'm what they call a bad patient. My wife will verify that. She's had to live through as closely as I believe she'll ever have to deal with hell. She's saved, so it's as close to hell as she'll ever get. Having to deal with me on that couch. Wanting to get off that couch so bad, half drugged up most of the time. Then why you do it, Brother Lott? Because I have a ambition that maybe one day I'll get to run again with my boys. And in life, you're going to have to make that choice. Contentment with God is great gain. You can leave here and I don't need to teach you what's right and what's wrong. Most of us in this room, we know. The question is, will we do it? Will we forgive because He says so? Will we love because He says so? Will we be happy because He says so? Or will we try to find us another way? I hope with all of my heart in this room today, from somebody that's lived enough in this life, if you don't learn anything from my life, anything I ever preached to you, I hope you learn this, is that God can take a nothing and make a something if the something will just stay in His hands. If the something will just stay in His hands. Will you pray with me? Father, thank you.